Cybersecurity Awareness Month with Troy Vinson.
The Azure DevOps Podcast is a show for developers and DevOps professionals shipping software using Microsoft technologies. Each show brings you hard-hitting interviews with industry experts, innovating better methods, and sharing success stories. Listen on to learn how to increase quality, ship quickly, and operate well. And now your host, Jeffrey Palermo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Jeffrey Palermo, your host, for helping you and your teams move fast, deliver quality, and run your software with confidence in Azure, all while using everything the .NET ecosystem has to offer. The podcast is sponsored by ClearMeasure, a software architecture company that empowers .NET teams to be self-sufficient and able to deliver world-class results. ClearMeasure is hiring architects and .NET engineers who would like a path to become architects. And final announcement, be sure to check out the new video show, Architect Tips. And I have with me today on the show as a guest, Troy Vinson, and he is a principal software architect at ClearMeasure and a CISSP, which is a Certified Information Systems Security Professional. Troy, welcome to the show. How are you, sir?
Hi, Jeffrey. I'm well. Happy to be here.
Now, October, which this show is coming out in October, is Cybersecurity Awareness Month. And you have one of the ever so important security certifications. Before we kind of get into the topic and what that is, can you explain for all of us, what is CISSP?
CISSP is a security certification. It covers 8 different domains of security. And basically, you have to have a background in cybersecurity, at least 5 years of experience, and really be able to show proficiency in multiple domains that are tested there. And so, it's really I'm very happy to have obtained that certification, and really look forward to pursuing more into cybersecurity, in as much as we are working in the DevOps field and bringing that into a DevOps or a DevSecOps type of work that we're doing.
Mm-hmm. Now, I like to ask all the guests, what are the high points in your career that kind of led you to this type of work? And especially in security, there's tons of people with an IT background but what are the high points of the path that kind of got you here?
Really, what got me here is I was a application architect and an application development manager for many years, and as we were working with different clients, we started receiving requests to make sure that our applications were secure, to be able to prove it, to be able to be audited on it, and at the time, I was really relying on contractors to tell me what it was that I needed to do to make sure that our clients got the information that they needed, and that we were able to meet the compliance standards that we were being asked to, and in working through those scenarios, I just really got interested in it and decided to pursue my master's degree in cybersecurity or information security and assurance. And it just became a hobby to an education to really a desire to help people with their security and with really securing the information that they have.
Mm-hmm. So October is the Cybersecurity Awareness Month. But I guess I would ask, says who? Who's declaring October to be?
Yeah. It's the National Cybersecurity Alliance. And this is a partner with agencies like the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, so in which we know as CISA, and it is a annual event that they do to bring awareness of cybersecurity to not just businesses but to individuals also, and it leans in a lot on personal responsibility in cybersecurity. As a matter of fact, the theme that they use is do your part and be cyber smart. So it really is getting individuals and organizations to own their role in protecting their part of the internet, their part of cyberspace, and really just stressing that accountability on both a corporate, organizational, and a personal level. So, getting people to not be so reactive to security, but to take proactive steps to enhance their cybersecurity.
Well, since this audience is mostly developers and people who are shipping software with Microsoft technologies, and you've got a huge development background that kind of informs your work in security, maybe we focus on what developers do as, you know, just to help developers become more cybersecurity aware. The thing that I think of most is lots of developers are working from home now, not just working from a corporate office. So they're connected to some sort of Wi-Fi. What should they be aware of when just even setting up a, you know, connected environment for themselves?
A lot of developers are going to the extra effort of making sure that they are working in a secure environment at home. So they'll be able to configure their routers, whether it comes from a cable company or fiber or some kind of fiber company that's giving them internet access, to be able to segregate their network from their work network, and then you have your home network, and then kind of maybe even making a special room on your network for IoT devices. Keep that away from your personal stuff and keep it away from your work stuff. And I think that's one of the best things that we can do. But that doesn't always get us to where we need to be, because it's not just working from home. Yeah. People are working from the coffee shop. Right. And so there is some personal responsibility that you have to take in there too, to either be able to log in, if your company has it available, a VPN that goes into their premises, and be able to work through a secure channel that way, or secure tunnel. Or when you're in a public space and you're using an open Wi-Fi like that, go ahead and use a personal VPN that encrypts end to end.
And do you have a favorite VPN service or a handful of them?
I do. So personally, I use, I have an account with NordVPN and ExpressVPN as my backup. I really like those. Nord is outside of the Five Eyes region. So there's a more privacy guaranteed in that. And they've also had some good audits, and we know that they're not logging, they're not capturing information as it comes across their channels. So, but being able to use a service like that is really beneficial to both the individual when they're using an app like a banking app. you know, to have that secured while you're on an open network. And it's also it's also beneficial to the company that they work for in being able to secure that traffic as well.
Okay. So now developers, I guess the rule of thumb is if you're not on a specially configured network, if you're at a coffee shop or the library or anywhere else, just work while connected to a VPN. That's really what you consider best practice.
Yes, it's definitely a best practice.
Okay. All right. So developers now working on source code. What should they be thinking about with where that source code is housed or moving around?
Well, and we have good repositories nowadays where we have good structures of teams and individual accounts, like GitHub has a really great structure, not just for the open source community, but for being able to lock down certain parts of the code or certain actions that happen with the code to teams or individuals. And then moving into like Azure DevOps allows you to have some more enterprise level controls over your repositories. So when you're with a company, a lot of it has to do with configuration and making sure that your code is secured to the people who need to have access to it and what they need to be able to do do with that code, or with your pipelines or however you're working with them.
So really, any of these professional hosters, no one's going to break in and get the code. It's more about configuring the teams and keeping things segmented. Is that right?
I'm not going to say no one's going to break in and get the code, because as soon as I say that, then of course that's going to breach. Yeah, then we'll hear about it, you know, tomorrow morning. But it is more secure, and the links that they've gone to make the platform secure is really good. GitHub is definitely one of my favorites, and it is secure, but nothing is ever 100% secure.
Now, what about other things that don't quite fit in a source control repository, like various documents that always seem to come with software projects?
Right. We do a lot of file sharing, whether it is through Dropbox or Google Drive or OneDrive. I think that recently we have started using more of these services to share files with one another, and it's really imperative to us to when we're sharing it outside of a corporate environment, where we have an on-prem or a hosted like SharePoint server, that we're careful with how we expose our files to the internet, using password protection, using expiring links to information, maybe using one-time passwords to share information with one another. Those are some good ways of doing that. From a company perspective, using a service like SharePoint or even OneDrive is good. OneDrive will allow you to share files within a company and only within a company. G Suite does the Google Applications does the same thing with G Drive. But if you really want to lock things down and have some enterprise level document control, then something like a SharePoint server is probably your best bet in doing that and being able to say prove your due diligence on keeping your information secure.
Okay. Before we get into coding practices and whatnot, is there something when people are working on the architecture of an application, is there anything they need to think about then? Are there security architecture models or practices?
There are. And I think the most important thing to be aware of is what your compliance reasons are. What is the reason that you're securing your product? Do you have regulatory requirements that you need to meet? Are there industry standards that you are required to meet, like PCI DSS, to be able to accept payment card information? But to know about that, before you start on an architecture, you should really know what your legal and governance requirements are, because that will inform your architecture in as much as how far do you need to go, how far are you required to go, and what burden of proof are you required to meet in your security architecture.
Mm-hmm. I've heard of the STRIDE model. Is that applicable here, or where does that fit in?
So yes, STRIDE was actually invented originally by Microsoft, and it's a great model for understanding what the threats are to your system, and that's kind of at the beginning of your architectural process, is to do some threat modeling. So once you have determined your components, and once you have determined your data flow, then you can start looking at your individual areas where data is moving to and from, and see what your vulnerabilities are in this area. And the STRIDE model helps you do that. STRIDE stands for spoofing, tampering, repudiation, information disclosure, denial of service, and elevation of privilege. And what that is like, you could have those as check marks on your different areas to say, I have a web application that has a front end that is open to the public internet. Is it subject to these areas? So my login form, is it subject to tampering? And that could be through something like SQL injection attacks. But using these five different areas, six different areas to really understand what the vulnerabilities are and what the threats to your system are, so that you can build that into your product and into your architecture, rather than having to be reactive to it later. You can start being proactive to it on the front end of your project or your design.
Many thanks to our podcast sponsor, Clear Measure. Clear Measure is a software architecture company that empowers clients' development teams to be self-sufficient, moving fast, delivering quality, and running their systems with confidence. Whether starting a new project or developing new technologies or techniques, Clear Measure sets up your team to deliver world-class results. Learn more at www.clearmeasure.com. Clear Measure, empowering software delivery.
Confirm or not, something that it seems is a widespread challenge, or maybe widespread people overlook it, the repudiation category, or proving somebody made a change. There's a lot of times when, especially online coding samples of how to use this data library or whatnot, it's we just make a change, update data in the database, and then going back, we really don't have a way in a lot of cases to see who actually made a particular change. Is that necessary all the time, or when is it necessary?
Well, repudiation in the STRIDE model is more talking about the threats to the system. Repudiation in code changes is a part of the configuration that we would do on the DevOps pipeline, on the code check-ins, whether or not we're using pull requests. And so we have, a good way of saying, okay, I am creating this pull request, and so it is my code that I want somebody to review. And then now you have a person who has submitted it, and you'll have somebody who is approving it. So, and so you have kind of a hierarchy of control to into that, and be able to go back in your logs and actually see, yes, who is it that is not just pushing to a branch, but who is saying that it is ready for review, and who said that it passed all the tests and it was actually ready for review.
Gotcha. Now, you mentioned tests. Are there test suites that people can use to get them jump-started to augment their functional tests with things that check for security things?
Sure. There's actually a lot of different partners that you can use out there to do that. There's on a very, very low level, you can, with Visual Studio, you can use Roslyn and FXCop to do static analysis, but that just kind of hits the bare minimum. Partners like Qualys, have products that you can integrate into your escalation, your project escalation, and have it do your automated testing, do your source code analysis, do some automated testing on actually maybe fuzzing or getting into bad data, how it reacts to different scenarios, and get a good feel for how secure your product really is.
Yeah. So static code analysis. I've heard of a Sonar Cube having some mm-hmm. rule sets as well. And then Independ, I think there's so many good products.
There's so many, right?
just make sure that we're using at least some of them.
And at least, again, in a lot of your, if you're working towards a compliance standard, the question is going to be, what is your burden on that? How far are you needing to go to prove a certain point? So if you are working with payment card data, and you are needing to prove PCI DSS compliance, then it's not gonna work for an auditor if you just say, oh yeah, we do static code analysis. Well, what do you do? Oh well, we kind of do a little of this, a little of that. You need to have a plan, and work with a partner that is going to give you the credibility of actually doing the test and being able to pass through a series of proofs on that.
Now, I think that may be a big idea here on the business side. Certainly, anybody can do their books on their own and record, revenue and costs and whatnot. But a lot of companies have actual professional accountants to close the books and to look at all those transactions. Is that how you suggest development teams think? Have some other party come from time to time and look and do some type of thin audit versus just trying to do it in-house?
Yeah, I really think that that all of the auditing structures, all the auditing paradigms are built off of that accounting system. They all work in the exact same way. If you're an auditor might ask you the exact same questions that they ask an accounting team about your information, your information systems. So it's very much the same that you would see in an accounting scenario.
Okay. But you don't want the outside firm to do the work. You just want them to make sure you're not missing anything, right?
That's correct.
Yeah. Okay. Now, what's your opinion on the OWASP top 10? Is that just like the ticket to the game, or is that all you need to do? Where does that lie?
Well, all of your engineers should be trained on OWASP Top 10, just so that they're aware.
And maybe define it also.
So OWASP Top 10 is it's really an open source community that keeps track of what the vulnerabilities are, primarily to web applications, and publishes a list as it changes. I believe the current list right now has been the same since 2017, and it is their top 10 most vulnerable parts of a system. And so it'll cover areas like cross-site scripting or buffer overflows, things for you to understand that these are vulnerabilities to your are possible vulnerabilities to your code, and that you have really established ways of checking for them, to test for them, and also to address those situations. And OWASP is really good about providing a good level of information that is actionable on each of those areas.
Okay. Now, so if it's changing and it was different before 2017, is there a comprehensive list? Is it like OWASP's top 20 or for some things that got demoted that used to be in the top 10?
So OWASP, no, they don't keep a longer running list. If you were wanting to go into that, there is SANS that also keeps their top 25. So you can look into that as well. I think that for a development team to be aware of the OWASP top 10 as a minimum requirement is essential. For your security personnel, those who are actually doing the testing, then yes, they need to have a broader understanding of those vulnerabilities and risk, and be able to not only point them out, but to explain remediation that can be done in those areas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we'll include the OWASP top 10 and all these other things in the show notes, but just glancing through it, number 6 was just the plain old boring outdated components and older libraries that have known security vulnerabilities.
Right.
It's like updating your stuff is an easy thing to do, but it's in the top 10.
Well, and it's not something that is unusual, because your code sits there sometimes, and if you're not making active changes to it, and it's a product that you have sitting out there, then somebody's making updates to these libraries that you're using, and some of them have security implications. So, yeah. You want to make sure that you do keep up on that. I think one of the things that people most often miss is when they're using a content management system, and those content management systems go through updates on a regular cycle. And what I've seen is a lot of teams will avoid updating a CMS because it may affect the way that their custom components have operate, with that system. That's especially true if they aren't careful about making sure that it's loosely coupled with that, so that it can be modified and they can be updated independently and work together very well.
Mm, good point. Good point. All right. So that's as we're coding and actively working on the code. What about deployment? Until we deploy something into production, or even just configuring environments, getting ready for deployments, there rules of thumb that developers need to think about there.
For developers.
Well, people shipping software, development teams,
this is where DevOps is really very appropriate. And because if you're thinking about security, you're thinking about testing, then it fits right into the deployment procedures in DevOps. So, you know, and that's when you're doing your automated testing, include your security testing in that. Don't just have a test that looks for the positive, and you know, make sure that, you know, that your assert is true, that when I log in, I actually get a username back. But what happens when somebody enters in a SQL injection attack? What happens when somebody sends in information that you're not expecting, or things that can be included in code somewhere else in your application? So, you know, use that opportunity of automated testing to test for the negative as well as for the positive.
Yeah, good point. Good point. Now, there's a lot of developer-related stuff, and of course, people shipping software always have these family members who consider themselves, you know, the go-to IT support rep of the family. Are there some cybersecurity awareness free online courses that we could, you know, just equip all of our family members, as opposed to just answering all the detailed questions and configuring their router for them?
Yeah, there really are, and the National Cybersecurity Alliance, they during Cybersecurity Awareness Month will have a number of resources that are really good for sharing with family members or people who are not necessarily tech savvy, and giving them really an idea of. What does it mean to be phished? You know, what are people trying to get you to do? And so there are videos. Just different things that will come out throughout the month. That if you follow that hashtag #BeCyberSmart, then you will see those come up quite a bit through October. And you'll see that. I mean, what does it mean to be targeted on this, and who's doing it, and how are they doing it? There's some good information that will come out during this month for that.
Nice. Yeah, I sometimes take it for granted. I get a text message that has some garbled, weird URL, and I'm thinking, that's fake. But it's not always obvious.
Right. It's definitely not always obvious. And I mean, if someone's on Facebook, they could get a message from someone they know that contains, you know, or they think they know, that contains a link or a file attachment that is designed to get them to move for it. And so, you know, it's important that that non-tech savvy people also understand, you know, not to just trust everything that comes through just because you think somebody is a good person and sending you something. But if you didn't ask for it, then why are you receiving it? And it's just a change in the way that you think about receiving information and sharing information. So that you're keeping yourself from getting tricked. Or for doing something that a nefarious individual is trying to get you to do.
Right. Awesome. Well, Troy, thanks for coming on the show and telling us about Cybersecurity Awareness Month. And we'll include everything we talked about in the show notes so that people can explore and find out more. But yeah, we've only scratched the surface, I'm sure.
Just the surface.
Awesome. All right. Thank you very much again. And until next time, keep shipping.
You've been listening to the Azure DevOps Podcast, a show for developers and DevOps professionals shipping software using Microsoft technologies. Go to www.azuredevops.show for show notes and other episodes. On behalf of your host, Jeffrey Palermo, and our sponsors, thanks for listening, and may God bless you.